many people had been killed in Susa. Then he told Esther, 500 people, including Haman's 10 sons, have been killed in Susa alone. If that many were killed here, what must have happened in the provinces? Is there anything else you want done? Just tell me, and it will be done. Esther answered, Your Majesty, please let the Jews in Susa fight to defend themselves tomorrow, just as they did today, and order the bodies of Haman's 10 sons to be hanged in public. King Xerxes did what Esther had requested, and the bodies of Haman's sons were hung in Susa. Then, on the 14th day of Adar, the Jews of the city got together and killed 300 more people. But they still did not take anything that belonged to their enemies. On the 13th day of Adar, the Jews in the provinces had come together to defend themselves. They killed 75,000 of their enemies. But the Jews did not take anything that belonged to the ones they killed. Then on the 14th day of the month, the Jews celebrated with a feast. On the 15th day of the month, the Jews in Susa held a holiday and celebrated after killing their enemies on the 13th and the 14th. This is why the Jews in the villages now celebrate on the 14th day of the month. It is a joyful holiday that they celebrate by feasting and sending gifts of food to each other. The Festival of Purim. Mordecai wrote down everything that had happened. Then he sent letters to the Jews everywhere in the provinces and told them, Each year you must celebrate on both the 14th and the 15th of Adar, the days when we Jews defeated our enemies. Remember this month as a time when our sorrow was turned to joy, and celebration took the place of crying. Celebrate by having parties, and by giving to the poor, and by sharing gifts of food with each other. They followed Mordecai's instructions and set aside these 2 days every year as a time of celebration. The reason for the Festival of Purim. Haman was the son of Hammedatha and a descendant of Agag. He hated the Jews so much that he planned to destroy them, but he wanted to find out the best time to do it. So he cast lots. Esther went to King Xerxes and asked him to save her people. Then the king gave written orders for Haman and his sons to be punished in the same terrible way that Haman had in mind for the Jews. So they were hanged. Mordecai's letter had said that the Jews must celebrate for 2 days because of what had happened to them. This time of celebration is called Purim, which is the Hebrew word for the lots that were cast. Now every year the Jews set aside these 2 days for having parties and celebrating, just as they were told to do. From now on, all Jewish families must remember to celebrate Purim on these 2 days each year. Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, wanted to give full authority to Mordecai's letter about the festival of Purim, and with his help, she wrote a letter about the feast. Copies of this letter were sent to Jews in the 127 provinces of King Xerxes. In the letter, they said, We pray that all of you will live in peace and safety. You and your descendants must always remember to celebrate Purim at the time and in the way that we have said. You must also follow the instructions that we have given you about mourning and going without eating. These laws about Purim are written by the authority of Queen Esther. The Greatness of Xerxes and Mordecai. Chapter 10. King Xerxes made everyone in his kingdom pay taxes, even those in lands across the sea. All the great and famous things that King Xerxes did are written in the record books of the kings of Media and Persia. These records also tell about the honors that the king gave to Mordecai. Next to the king himself, Mordecai was the highest official in the kingdom. He was a popular leader of the Jews because he helped them in many ways and would even speak to the king for them.
This ends Esther, narrated by Suzanne Torin. You have been listening to The Holy Bible, The Historical Books of the Old Testament, Part 5. Narrated by Richard M. Davidson, Jack Garrett, and Suzanne Torin. Books of Poetry and Wisdom, Part 1. Job. Narrated by Norman Dietz.
Job. About this book. Job was a very rich man, and although he did not belong to the people of Israel, he worshipped the Lord and was a truly good person. But Satan talked to God and accused Job of serving God only because God was blessing him. God agreed to let Satan take away Job's wealth, his children, and finally his health, to see whether Job would stay faithful to God. Job did remain faithful. Then three of Job's friends came to comfort him. They believed that health and prosperity were signs of God's blessing. And because Job had lost both his health and his prosperity, the three friends insisted that God must be punishing Job for some sin. Job answered that he was innocent, and this meant that they were wrong. Job and the friends argued back and forth, with neither side really proving the other wrong, although at the end of the argument the friends gave up. Job was suffering deeply, and several times during the argument he asked God to appear and explain the reason for his suffering. Then, after the friends stopped speaking, Job decided that human beings cannot find the kind of wisdom that gives answers to the deep questions of life. Only God has that wisdom. Job ended his speeches by swearing that he was innocent of doing wrong. At this point, a young bystander named Elihu began talking. He repeated some of what had already been said, but he also criticized both sides of the argument. Elihu finished with a poem praising God's care for nature. God finally did appear to Job, but he didn't explain Job's suffering. Instead, God showed that the many things he does cannot be understood by humans. Humans cannot do what God does. God criticized Job for talking so much when he knew so little. But he also said that Job had remained his faithful servant. And so, at the very end, the book tells how God blessed Job and made him twice as wealthy as he had been before. Job and his family. Chapter 1. Many years ago, a man named Job lived in the land of Uz. He was a truly good person who respected God and refused to do evil. Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 pair of oxen, 500 donkeys, and a large number of servants. He was the richest person in the East. Job's sons took turns having feasts in their homes, and they always invited their 3 sisters to join in the eating and drinking. After each feast, Job would send for his children and perform a ceremony as a way of asking God to forgive them of any wrongs they may have done. He would get up early the next morning and offer a sacrifice for each of them, just in case they had sinned or silently cursed God. Angels, the Lord, and Satan. One day, when the angels had gathered around the Lord, and Satan was there with them, the Lord asked, "Satan, where have you been?" Satan replied, "I've been going all over the earth." Then the Lord asked, "What do you think of my servant Job? No one on earth is like him. He is a truly good person who respects me and refuses to do evil." "Why shouldn't he respect you?" Satan remarked. "You are like a wall protecting not only him, but his entire family and all his property. You make him successful in whatever he does, and his flocks and herds are everywhere." try taking away everything he owns, and he will curse you to your face." The Lord replied, "All right, Satan, do what you want with anything that belongs to him, but don't harm Job." Then Satan left. Job loses everything. Job's sons and daughters were having a feast in the home of his oldest son when someone rushed up to Job and said, "While your servants were plowing with your oxen and your donkeys were nearby eating grass, a gang of Sabaeans attacked and stole the oxen and donkeys. Your other servants were killed, and I was the only one who escaped to tell you." That servant was still speaking when a second one came running up and saying, "God sent down a fire that killed your sheep and your servants. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." Before that servant finished speaking, a third one raced up and said, "Three gangs of Chaldeans attacked and stole your camels. All of your other servants were killed, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you." That servant was still speaking when a fourth one dashed up and said, "Your children were having a feast and drinking wine at the home of your oldest son, when suddenly a windstorm from the desert blew the house down, crushing all of your children. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." When Job heard this, he tore his clothes and shaved his head because of his great sorrow. He knelt on the ground, then worshipped God and said, "We bring nothing at birth, we take nothing with us at death. The Lord alone gives and takes. Praise the name of the Lord." In spite of everything, Job did not sin or accuse God of doing wrong. Job loses his health. Chapter 2. When the angels gathered around the Lord again, Satan was there with them, and the Lord asked, "Satan, where have you been?" Satan replied, "I have been going all over the earth." Then the Lord asked, "What do you think of my servant Job? No one on earth is like him. He is a truly good person who respects me and refuses to do evil. And he hasn't changed even though you persuaded me to destroy him for no reason." Satan answered, "There's no pain like your own. People will do anything to stay alive. Try striking Job's own body with pain, and he will curse you to your face." "All right," the Lord replied. "Make Job suffer as much as you want, but just don't kill him." Satan left and caused painful sores to break out all over Job's body from head to toe. Then Job sat on the ash heap to show his sorrow. And while he was scraping his sores with a broken piece of pottery, his wife asked, "Why do you still trust God? Why don't you curse him and die?" Job replied, "Don't talk like a fool. If we accept blessings from God, we must accept trouble as well." In all that happened, Job never once said anything against God. Job's three friends. Eliphaz from Teman, Bildad from Shuah, and Zophar from Naamah were three of Job's friends, and they heard about his troubles. So they agreed to visit Job and comfort him. When they came near enough to see Job, they could hardly recognize him. And in their great sorrow, they tore their clothes, then sprinkled dust on their heads and cried bitterly. For 7 days and nights, they sat silently on the ground beside him because they realized what terrible pain he was in. Job's first speech. Blot out the day of my birth. Chapter 3. Finally, Job cursed the day of his birth by saying to God, "Blot out the day of my birth and the night when my parents created a son. Forget about that day, cover it with darkness, and send thick, gloomy shadows to fill it with dread. Erase that night from the calendar and conceal it with darkness. Don't let children be created or joyful shouts be heard ever again in that night. Let those with magic powers place a curse on that day. Darken its morning stars and remove all hope of light, because it let me be born into a world of trouble. Why didn't I die at birth? Why didn't I die at birth? Why was I accepted and allowed to nurse at my mother's breast? Now I would be at peace in the silent world below, with kings and their advisers whose palaces lie in ruins, and with rulers once rich with silver and gold. I wish I had been born dead, and then buried, never to see the light of day. In the world of the dead, the wicked and the weary rest without a worry. Everyone is there, where captives and slaves are free at last. Why does God let me live? Why does God let me live when life is miserable and so bitter? I keep longing for death more than I would seek a valuable treasure. Nothing could make me happier than to be in the grave. Why do I go on living when God has me surrounded and I can't see the road? Moaning and groaning are my food and drink, and my worst fears have all come true. I have no peace or rest, only troubles and worries. Eliphaz's first speech. Please be patient and listen. Chapter 4. Eliphaz from Teman said, "Please be patient and listen to what I have to say. Remember how your words have guided and encouraged many in need. But now you feel discouraged when struck by trouble. You respect God and live right, so don't lose hope. No truly innocent person has ever died young. In my experience, only those who plant seeds of evil harvest trouble, and then they are swept away by the angry breath of God. They may roar and growl like powerful lions, but when God breaks their teeth, they starve and their children are scattered." A secret was told to me. A secret was told to me in a faint whisper. I was overcome by sleep, but disturbed by dreams. I trembled with fear, and my hair stood on end as a wind blew past my face. It stopped and stood still. Then a form appeared, a shapeless form, and from the silence I heard a voice say, "No humans are innocent in the eyes of God their Creator. He finds fault with his servants and even with his angels. Humans are formed from clay and are fragile as moths, so what chance do you have? Born after daybreak, you die before nightfall and disappear forever. Your tent pegs are pulled up, and you leave this life having gained no wisdom." Eliphaz continues. Call out for help. Chapter 5. Job, call out for help and see if an angel comes. Envy and jealousy will kill a stupid fool. I have seen fools take root, but God sends a curse, suddenly uprooting them and leaving their children helpless in court. Then hungry and greedy people gobble down their crops and grab up their wealth. Our suffering isn't caused by the failure of crops. It's all part of life, like sparks shooting skyward. Job, if I were you, I would ask God for help. His miracles are marvelous, more than we can count. God sends showers on earth and waters the fields. He protects the sorrowful and lifts up those who have been disgraced. God swiftly traps the wicked in their own evil schemes, and their wisdom fails. Darkness is their only companion, hiding their path at noon. God rescues the needy from the words of the wicked and the fist of the mighty. The poor are filled with hope, and injustice is silenced. Consider yourself fortunate. Consider yourself fortunate if God all-powerful chooses to correct you. He may cause injury and pain, but he will bandage and heal your cuts and bruises. God will protect you from harm, no matter how often trouble may strike. In times of war and famine, God will keep you safe. You will be sheltered without fear of hurtful words or any other weapon. You will laugh at the threat of destruction and famine. And you won't be afraid of wild animals. They will no longer be fierce, and your rocky fields will become friendly. Your home will be secure, and your sheep will be safe. You will have more descendants than there are blades of grass on the face of the earth. You will live a long life, and your body will be strong until the day you die. Our experience has proven these things to be true. So listen and learn. Job's reply to Eliphaz. It's impossible. Chapter 6. Job said, "It's impossible to weigh my misery and grief. They outweigh the sand along the beach, and that's why I have spoken without thinking first. The fearsome arrows of God all-powerful have filled my soul with their poison. Do oxen and wild donkeys cry out in distress unless they are hungry? What is food without salt? What is more tasteless than the white of an egg? That's how my food tastes, and my appetite is gone. How I wish that God would answer my prayer and do away with me. Then I would be comforted, knowing that in all of my pain I have never disobeyed God. Why should I patiently hope when my strength is gone? I am not strong as stone or bronze, and I have finally reached the end of my rope. My friends, I am desperate. My friends, I am desperate, and you should help me, even if I no longer respect God all-powerful. But you are treacherous as streams that swell with melting snow, then suddenly disappear in the summer heat. I am like a caravan lost in the desert while searching for water. Caravans from Tema and Sheba thought they would find water, but they were disappointed, just as I am with you. Only one look at my suffering and you run away, scared. What have I done wrong? Have I ever asked any of you to give me a gift or to purchase my freedom from brutal enemies? What have I done wrong? Show me, and I will keep quiet. The truth is always painful, but your arguments prove nothing. Here I am, desperate, and you consider my words as worthless as wind. Why, you would sell an orphan or your own neighbor. Look me straight in the eye. I won't lie to you. Stop accusing me falsely. My reputation is at stake. I know right from wrong, and I am not telling lies." Job continues. Why is life so hard? Chapter 7. Why is life so hard? Why do we suffer? We are slaves in search of shade. We are laborers longing for our wages. God has made my days drag on and my nights miserable. I pray for night to end, but it stretches out while I toss and turn. My parched skin is covered with worms, dirt, and sores, and my days are running out quicker than the thread of a fast-moving needle. Don't forget. I beg you, God, don't forget. My life is just a breath, and trouble lies ahead. I will vanish from sight, and no one, including you, will ever see me again. I will disappear in the grave or vanish from sight like a passing cloud. Never will I return home. soon I will be forgotten. And so I cry out to you in agony and distress. Am I the sea or a sea monster? Is that why you imprison me? I go to bed hoping for rest, but you torture me with terrible dreams. I'd rather choke to death than live in this body. Leave me alone and let me die. My life has no meaning. What makes you so concerned about us humans? Why do you test us from sunrise to sunset? Won't you look away just long enough for me to swallow? Why do you watch us so closely? What's it to you if I sin? Why am I your target and such a heavy burden? Why do you refuse to forgive? Soon you won't find me, because I'll be dead. Bildad's first speech. How long will you talk? Chapter 8. Bildad from Shua said, How long will you talk and keep saying nothing? Does God all-powerful stand in the way of justice? He made your children pay for their sins, so why don't you turn to him and start living right? Then he will decide to rescue and restore you to your place of honor. Your future will be brighter by far than your past. Our ancestors were wise. Our ancestors were wise, so learn from them. Our own time has been short, like a fading shadow, and we know very little. But they will instruct you with great understanding. Papyrus reeds grow healthy only in a swamp, and if the water dries up, they die sooner than grass. Such is the hopeless future of all who turn from God and trust in something as frail as a spider's web. They take hold and fall because it's so flimsy. Sinful people are like plants with spreading roots and plenty of sun and water. They wrap their roots tightly around rocks, but once they are pulled up, they have no more place. Their life slips away, and other plants grow there. We know God doesn't reject an innocent person or help a sinner. And so he will make you happy and give you something to smile about. But your evil enemies will be put to shame and disappear forever. Job's reply to Bildad. What you say is true. Chapter 9. Job said, What you say is true. No human is innocent in the sight of God. Not once in a thousand times could we win our case if we took him to court. God is wise and powerful. Who could possibly oppose him and win? When God becomes angry, he can move mountains before they even know it. God can shake the earth loose from its foundations or command the sun and stars to hold back their light. God alone stretched out the sky, stepped on the sea, and set the stars in place, the Big Dipper and Orion, the Pleiades and the stars in the southern sky. Of all the miracles God works, we cannot understand a one. God walks right past me without making a sound. And if he grabs something, who can stop him or raise a question? When God showed his anger, the servants of the sea monster fell at his feet. How then could I possibly argue my case with God? Though I am innocent... Even though I am innocent, I can only beg for mercy. And if God came into court when I called him, he would not hear my case. He would strike me with a storm and increase my injuries for no reason at all. Before I could get my breath, my miseries would multiply. God is much stronger than I am, and who would call me into court to give me justice? Even if I were innocent... God would prove me wrong. I am not guilty, but I no longer care what happens to me. What difference does it make? God destroys the innocent along with the guilty. When a good person dies a sudden death, God sits back and laughs. And who else but God blindfolds the judges, then lets the wicked take over the earth? My life is speeding by. My life is speeding by without a hope of happiness. Each day passes swifter than a sailing ship or an eagle swooping down. Sometimes I try to be cheerful and to stop complaining, but my sufferings frighten me because I know that God still considers me guilty. So what's the use of trying to prove my innocence? Even if I washed myself with the strongest soap, God would throw me into a pit of stinking slime, leaving me disgusting to my clothes. God isn't a mere human like me. I can't put him on trial. Who could possibly judge between the two of us? Can someone snatch away the stick God carries to frighten me? Then I could speak up without fear of him. But for now, I cannot speak. Job complains to God. I am sick of life. Chapter 10. I am sick of life, and from my deep despair I complain to you, my God. Don't just condemn me, point out my sin. Why do you take such delight in destroying those you created and in smiling on sinners? Do you look at things the way we humans do? Is your life as short as ours? Is that why you are so quick to find fault with me? You know I am innocent, but who can defend me against you? Will you now destroy someone you created? Remember that you molded me like a piece of clay, so don't turn me back into dust once again. As cheese is made from milk, you created my body from a tiny drop. Then you tied my bones together with muscles and covered them with flesh and skin. You, the source of my life, showered me with kindness and watched over me. You have not explained. You have not explained all of your mysteries, but you catch and punish me each time I sin. Guilty or innocent, I am condemned and ashamed because of my troubles. No matter how hard I try, you keep hunting me down like a powerful lion. You never stop accusing me. You become furious and attack over and over again. Why did you let me be born? I would rather have died before birth and been carried to the grave without ever breathing. I have only a few days left. Why don't you leave me alone? Let me find some relief before I travel to the land of darkness and despair, the place of no return. Zophar's first speech. So much foolish talk. Chapter 11. Zophar from Naamah said, "So much foolish talk cannot go unanswered. Your words have silenced others and made them ashamed. Now it is only right for you to be put to shame. You claim to be innocent and argue that your beliefs are acceptable to God. But I wish he would speak and let you know that wisdom has many different sides. You would then discover that God has punished you less than you deserve. Can you understand the mysteries surrounding God all-powerful? They are higher than the heavens and deeper than the grave. So what can you do when you know so little and these mysteries outreach the earth and the ocean? If God puts you in prison or drags you to court, what can you do? God has the wisdom to know when someone is worthless and sinful. But it's easier to tame a wild donkey than to make a fool wise. Surrender your heart to God. Surrender your heart to God. turn to him in prayer and give up your sins, even those you do in secret. Then you won't be ashamed. You will be confident and fearless. Your troubles will go away like water beneath a bridge, and your darkest night will be brighter than noon. You will rest, safe and secure, filled with hope and emptied of worry. You will sleep without fear and be greatly respected. But those who are evil will go blind and lose their way. Their only escape is death. Job's reply to Zophar. You think you are so great. Chapter 12. Job said to his friends, You think you are so great with all the answers, but I know as much as you do, and so does everyone else. I have always lived right, and God answered my prayers. Now friends make fun of me. It's easy to condemn those who are suffering when you have no troubles. Robbers and other godless people live safely at home and say, God is in our hands. If you want to learn, then go and ask the wild animals and the birds, the flowers and the fish. Any of them can tell you what the Lord has done. Every living creature is in the hands of God. We hear with our ears, taste with our tongues, and gain some wisdom from those who have lived a long time. But God is the real source of wisdom and strength. No one can rebuild what he destroys or release those he has imprisoned. God can hold back the rain or send a flood, just as he rules over liars and those they lie to. God destroys counselors, turns judges into fools, and makes slaves of kings. God removes priests and others who have great power. He confuses wise, experienced advisers, puts mighty kings to shame, and takes away their power. God turns darkness to light. He makes nations strong, then shatters their strength. God strikes their rulers senseless, then leaves them to roam through barren deserts, lost in the dark, staggering like someone drunk. Job continues, I know and understand. Chapter 13. I know and understand every bit of this. None of you are smarter than I am. There's nothing you know that I don't. But I prefer to argue my case with God all-powerful. You are merely useless doctors who treat me with lies. The wisest thing you can do is to keep quiet and listen to my argument. Are you telling lies for God and not telling the whole truth when you argue his case? If he took you to court, could you fool him just as you fool others? If you were secretly unfair, he would correct you, and his glorious splendor would make you terrified. Your wisdom and argument are as delicate as dust. Be quiet while I speak. Be quiet while I speak, then say what you will. I will be responsible for what happens to me. God may kill me, but still I will trust him and offer my defense. This may be what saves me, because no guilty person would come to his court. Listen carefully to my words. I have prepared my case well, and I am certain to win. If you can prove me guilty, I will give up and die. Job prays. I ask only two things. I ask only two things of you, my God, and I will no longer hide from you. Stop punishing and terrifying me. Then speak, and I will reply. Or else let me speak and you reply. Please point out my sins so I will know them. Why have you turned your back and count me your enemy? Do you really enjoy frightening a fallen leaf? Why do you accuse me of horrible crimes and make me pay for sins I did in my youth? You have tied my feet down and keep me surrounded. I am rotting away like cloth eaten by worms. Job continues his prayer. Life is short and sorrowful. Chapter 14. Life is short and sorrowful for every living soul. We are flowers that fade and shadows that vanish. And so I ask you, God, why pick on me? There's no way a human can be completely pure. Our time on earth is brief. The number of our days is already decided by you. Why don't you leave us alone and let us find some happiness while we toil and labor? When a tree is chopped down. When a tree is chopped down, there is always the hope that it will sprout again. Its roots and stump may rot, but at the touch of water, fresh twigs shoot up. Humans are different. We die, and that's the end. We are like streams and lakes after the water has gone. We fall into the sleep of death, never to rise again until the sky disappears. Please, hide me, God, deep in the ground, and when you are angry no more, remember to rescue me. Will we humans live again? Will we humans live again? I would gladly suffer and wait for my time. My Creator, you would want me. You would call out, and I would answer. You would take care of me, but not count my sins. You would put them in a bag, tie it tight, and toss them away. But in the real world, mountains tumble and rocks crumble, streams wear away stones and wash away soil, and you destroy our hopes. You change the way we look, then send us away, wiped out forever. We never live to know if our children are praised or disgraced. We feel no pain but our own, and when we mourn, it's only for ourselves. Eliphaz's second speech. If you had any sense. Chapter 15. Eliphaz from Teman said, Job, if you had any sense, you would stop spreading all of this hot air. Your words are enough to make others turn from God and lead them to doubt. And your sinful, scheming mind is the source of all you say. I am not here as your judge. Your own words are witnesses against you. Were you the first human? Are you older than the hills? Have you ever been present when God's counsel meets? Do you alone have wisdom? Do you know and understand something we don't? We have the benefit of wisdom older than your father, and you have been offered comforting words from God. Isn't this enough? Your emotions are out of control, making you look fierce. That's why you attack God with everything you say. No human is pure and innocent, and neither are angels, not in the sight of God. If God doesn't trust his angels, what chance do humans have? We are so terribly evil that we thirst for sin. Just listen to what I know. Just listen to what I know, and you will learn wisdom known by others since ancient times. Those who gained such insights also gained the land, and they were not influenced by foreign teachings. But suffering is in store each day for those who sin. Even in times of success, they constantly hear the threat of doom. Darkness, despair, and death are their destiny. They scrounge around for food, all the while dreading the approaching darkness. They are overcome with despair, like a terrified king about to go into battle. This is because they rebelled against God all-powerful and have attacked him with their weapons. They may be rich and fat, but they will live in the ruins of deserted towns. Their property and wealth will shrink and disappear. They won't escape the darkness, and the blazing breath of God will set their future aflame. They have put their trust in something worthless. Now they will become worthless, like a date palm tree without a leaf, or like vineyards or orchards whose blossoms and unripe fruit drop to the ground. Yes, the godless and the greedy will have nothing but flames feasting on their homes, because they are the parents of trouble and vicious lies. Job's reply to Eliphaz. I have often heard this. Chapter 16. Job said, I have often heard this, and it offers no comfort. So why don't you keep quiet? What's bothering you? If I were in your place, it would be easy to criticize or to give advice, but I would offer hope and comfort instead. If I speak, or if I don't, I hurt all the same. My torment continues. God has worn me down and destroyed my family. My shriveled-up skin proves that I am his prisoner. God is my hateful enemy, glaring at me and attacking with his sharp teeth. Everyone is against me. They sneer and slap my face. And God is the one who handed me over to this merciless mob. Everything was going well. Everything was going well until God grabbed my neck and shook me to pieces. God set me up as the target for his arrows, and without showing mercy, he slashed my stomach open, spilling out my insides. God never stops attacking, and so in my sorrow I dress in sackcloth and sit in the dust. My face is red with tears, and dark shadows circle my eyes, though I am not violent and my prayers are sincere. If I should die, I beg the earth not to cover my cry for justice. Even now, God in heaven is both my witness and my protector. My friends have rejected me, but God is the one I beg to show that I am right, just as a friend should, because in only a few years I will be dead and gone. Job complains to God. My hopes have died. Chapter 17. My hopes have died. My time is up and the grave is ready. All I can see are angry crowds making fun of me. If you, Lord, don't help, who will pay the price for my release? My friends won't really listen, all because of you, and so you must be the one to prove them wrong. They have condemned me just to benefit themselves. Now blind their children. You, God, are the reason I am insulted and spit on. I am almost blind with grief. My body is a mere shadow. People who are truly good would feel so alarmed that they would become angry at my worthless friends. They would do the right thing, and because they did, they would grow stronger. But none of my friends show any sense. My life is drawing to an end. Hope has disappeared. But all my friends can do is offer empty hopes. I could tell the world below to prepare me a bed. Then I could greet the grave as my father and say to the worms, "Hello, mother and sisters." But what kind of hope is that? Will it keep me company in the world of the dead? Bildad's second speech. How long will you talk? Chapter 18. Bildad from Shua said, How long will you talk? Be sensible. Let us speak. Or do you think that we are dumb animals? You cut yourself in anger. Will that shake the earth or even move the rocks? The lamps of sinful people soon are snuffed out, leaving their tents dark. Their powerful legs become weak, and they stumble on schemes of their own doing. Before they know it, they are trapped in a net, hidden along the path. Terror strikes and pursues from every side. Starving, they run, only to meet disaster, then afterwards to be eaten alive by death itself. Those sinners are dragged from the safety of their tents to die a gruesome death. Then their tents and possessions are burned to ashes, and they are left like trees dried up from the roots. They are gone and forgotten, thrown far from the light into a world of darkness without any children to carry on their name. Everyone, from east to west, is overwhelmed with horror. Such is the fate of sinners and their families who don't know God. Job's reply to Bildad. How long will you torture me? Chapter 19. Job said, How long will you torture me with your words? Isn't 10 times enough for you to accuse me? Aren't you ashamed? Even if I have sinned, you haven't been harmed. You boast of your goodness, claiming I am suffering because I am guilty. But God is the one at fault for finding fault with me. Though I pray to be rescued from this torment, no whisper of justice answers me. God has me trapped with a wall of darkness and stripped of respect. God rips me apart, uproots my hopes, and attacks with fierce anger as though I were his enemy. His entire army advances, then surrounds my tent. I am forgotten. God has turned relatives and friends against me, and I am forgotten. My guests and my servants consider me a stranger, and when I call my servants, they pay no attention. My breath disgusts my wife. Everyone in my family turns away. Young children can't stand me, and when I come near, they make fun. My best friends and loved ones have turned from me. I am skin and bones, just barely alive. My friends, I beg you for pity. God has made me his target. Hasn't he already done enough? Why do you join the attack? I wish that my words could be written down or chiseled into rock. I know that my Savior lives, and at the end he will stand on this earth. My flesh may be destroyed, yet from this body I will see God. Yes, I will see him for myself, and I long for that moment. My friends, you think up ways to blame and torment me, saying I brought it on myself. But watch out for the judgment when God will punish you. Zophar's second speech. Your words are disturbing. Chapter 20. Zophar from Naamah said, Your words are disturbing. Now I must speak. You have accused and insulted me, and reason requires a reply. Since the time of creation, everyone has known that sinful people are happy for only a while. Though their pride and power may reach to the sky, they will disappear like dust. And those who knew them will wonder what happened. They will be forgotten like a dream and vanish from the sight of family and friends. Their children will have to repay what the parents took from the poor. Indeed, the wicked will die and go to their graves in the prime of life. Sinners love the taste of sin. Sinners love the taste of sin. They relish every bite and swallow it slowly. But their food will turn sour and poison their stomachs. Then God will make them lose the wealth they gobbled down. They will die from the fangs of poisonous snakes and never enjoy rivers flowing with milk and honey. Their hard work will result in nothing gained because they cheated the poor and took their homes. Greedy people want everything and are never satisfied. But when nothing remains for them to grab, they will be nothing. Once they have everything, distress and despair will strike them down, and God will make them swallow his blazing anger. While running from iron spears, they will be killed by arrows of bronze, whose shining tips go straight through their bodies. They will be trapped by terror, and what they treasure most will be lost in the dark. God will send flames to destroy them in their tents with all their property. The heavens and the earth will testify against them, and all their possessions will be dragged off when God becomes angry. This is what God has decided for those who are evil. Job's reply to Zophar. If you want to offer comfort. Chapter 21. Job said, "If you want to offer comfort, then listen to me. And when I have finished, you can start your insults all over again. My complaint is against God. That's why I am impatient. Just looking at me is enough to make you sick, and the very thought of myself fills me with disgust. Why do evil people live so long and gain such power? Why are they allowed to see their children grow up? They have no worries at home, and God never punishes them. Their cattle have lots of calves, without ever losing one. Their children play and dance safely by themselves. These people sing and celebrate to the sound of tambourines, small harps, and flutes, and they are successful without a worry until the day they die. Leave us alone. Those who are evil say to God All-Powerful, 'Leave us alone. Don't bother us with your teachings. What do we gain from praying and worshiping you? We succeeded all on our own.' And so I keep away from them and their evil schemes. How often does God become angry and send disaster and darkness to punish sinners? How often does he strike them like a windstorm that scatters straw? You say, 'God will punish those sinners' children in place of those sinners.' But I say, 'Let him punish those sinners themselves until they really feel it. Let God All-Powerful force them to drink their own destruction from the cup of his anger. Because after they are dead, they won't care what happens to their children.' Who can tell God what to do? Who can tell God what to do? He judges powerful rulers. Some of us die prosperous, enjoying good health, while others die in poverty, having known only pain. But we all end up dead beneath a blanket of worms. My friends, I know that you are plotting against me. You ask, 'Where is the home of that important person who does so much evil?' Everyone, near and far, agrees that those who do wrong never suffer disaster when God becomes angry. No one points out their sin or punishes them. Then, at their funerals, they are highly praised. The earth welcomes them home while crowds mourn. But empty, meaningless words are the comfort you offer me." Eliphaz's third speech. What use are we humans to God? Chapter 22. Eliphaz from Teman said, "What use are we humans to God, even the wisest of us? If you were completely sinless, that would still mean nothing to God All-Powerful. Is he correcting you for worshiping him? No, it's because of your terrible sins. To guarantee payment of a debt, you have taken clothes from the poor, and you refused bread and water to the hungry and thirsty, although you were rich, respected, and powerful. You have turned away widows and have broken the arms of orphans. That's why you were suddenly trapped by terror, blinded by darkness, and drowned in a flood? God lives in the heavens. God lives in the heavens above the highest stars, where he sees everything. Do you think the deep darkness hides you from God? Do thick clouds cover his eyes as he walks around heaven's dome high above the earth? Give up those ancient ideas believed by sinners who were swept away without warning. They rejected God all-powerful, feeling he was helpless, although he had been kind to their families. The beliefs of these sinners are truly disgusting. When God's people see the godless swept away, they celebrate, saying, "Our enemies are gone, and fire has destroyed their possessions." Surrender to God all-powerful. Surrender to God all-powerful. You will find peace and prosperity. Listen to his teachings and take them to heart. If you return to God and turn from sin, all will go well for you. So get rid of your finest gold as though it were sand. Let God all-powerful be your silver and gold, and you will find happiness by worshiping him. God will answer your prayers, and you will keep the promises you made to him. He will do whatever you ask, and life will be bright. When others are disgraced, God will clear their names in answer to your prayers. Even those who are guilty will be forgiven because you obey God. Job's reply to Eliphaz. Today I complain bitterly. Chapter 23. Job said, "Today I complain bitterly because God has been cruel and made me suffer. If I knew where to find God, I would go there and argue my case. Then I would discover what he wanted to say. Would he overwhelm